Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. You could support this show by going to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. And this week, because I happen to be out of town, I recently recorded an interview with Jess Piper, who kind of went viral recently after Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama, delivered a response to Joe Biden's State of the Union.
Oh, with that weird voice?
With the weird, high-pitched voice that Jess Piper kind of defined as the fundy baby voice.
So weird.
It was. And so I wanted to talk to her about that. And I also wanted to talk about the fact, and she brought this up as well, is it fair to criticize a woman for her voice? But also, what she heard when she heard Katie Britt speak was something that she, as a former fundamentalist Christian, could really attest to.
Sure.
As this is learned behavior,
yeah.
And it says a lot.
So, yeah, I think the affectation of it is what's weird, not necessarily just her natural human voice.
Yes. And so I spoke with Jess Piper about it, and we're going to play that interview for you now.
Talk to you next week.
Jess Piper was an American literature teacher for 16 years before deciding to take the plunge and run for office. She ran for a Missouri State House seat in a deeply red district, and while she didn't win, she continues to advance her activism as executive director of Blue Missouri and hosts a weekly podcast called Dirt Road Democrat. I've been reading her essays at The View from Rural Missouri for a while now, but I was amazed by how much one of her recent posts, one of her recent pieces, really resonated with so many people. Because you may remember that after President Biden delivered the State of the Union, the Republicans tapped Alabama Senator Katie Britt to deliver the response. It was not great. It was memorable for all the wrong reasons. It screamed high school theater kid. It was so bad that Scarlett Johansson imitated her on Saturday Night Live. But Jess Piper saw something different, something religious, and that's why I wanted to talk to her. Let me bring her in here. Hi, Jess. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. I gave a brief introduction, but can you tell everyone a little bit more about who you are, what you do before we get into all the fun, fundy baby stuff?
Sure. So you have summoned a woman from the cornfields and the bean fields of Northwest Missouri to speak today. My name is Jess Piper. I was a literature teacher for 16 years. And in 2018, Missouri passed an abortion ban, which got me way more politically active. And in 2020, I went to vote, and there was no Democratic person running for state rep on my ballot. So I decided if no one else was going to do it, I did it. And in the state of Missouri, you can't be a teacher and run for office. So I had to choose, and I chose, and I lost. But that was kind of predictable. I live in a place that hasn't elected a Democrat in 32 years. But anyway,
can you go back for a second and tell me? I've never heard that rule that you can't be a teacher and run for office. Is that specific to teachers, or is that you can't have any other job?
Teachers, specific to teachers, which is really weird, right? I mean, you've got 66,000 really well-educated folks in the state who cannot run for office unless they want to leave their career. And so I think it's purposeful, obviously, but yeah.
And now you're running an organization called Blue Missouri.
Yes. Now I work with Blue Missouri, and we support down ballot candidates who normally don't get support from the state party. We like to say that we fill in the gap because, you know, in general, state parties need to focus on a few races that they hope can flip. And my thing is, hey, there's still 163, seats across the House that have no funding and no one helping them. So we fill in that gap.
Well, excellent. Well, let's talk about this speech that Katie Britt gave first, and I have a bunch of clips lined up that I think people will enjoy, but let me play a small portion of Katie Britt's State of the Union response, and then we could talk about what you heard from that.
First of all, we see you. We hear you. And we stand with you. Our future starts around kitchen tables just like this, with moms and dads just like you. And you are why I believe, with every fiber of my being, that despite the current state of our union, our best days are still ahead.
Okay, so what did you notice about her speech when you heard it?
Well, I didn't plan to listen to it. And I was heading out of the living room and it came on and I jerked my head around and I looked at the TV and I was like, oh, I know who Katie Britt is. I actually didn't know who she was, but as soon as I heard that voice, I did. Let me start off by saying that I'm not trying to, this is sort of feels like patriarchy to attack a woman for the way her voice sounds. This is not what Katie Britt sounds like. This is what she sounded like for the audience that evening. In general, she sounds like I do. She sounds like, you know, a woman who is a senator.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting is someone played a clip that she put out. I mean, she put out a clip on her social media, maybe 10 or 15 minutes before her speech began. Sounded totally fine, innocuous. I never would have, no one would be making fun of it if she talked like normal, how she normally does. But she went into a different vocal pattern when she gave that delivery.
Right. And I call it Fundy baby voice, but the Fundy part came later. I was born and raised in the Fundamentalist Church, a Southern Baptist, and we always called it the baby voice. It's what women would do when they were needing to sound submissive, needing to sound like they were going to obey, needing to sound like, you know, they were true Christian women. They would slip back into this high-pitched, childlike, breathy voice. And you heard it there. And the really long pauses and the way she does sound like a child and the way she, you know, it's the voice. It's the Fundy baby voice. So Fundy is a snarky term for fundamentalist. Sure. So we added that later. But I know you have some other clips. But when you hear that and when you were born and raised into a religion like I was, it's immediately I knew who she was speaking to. And it wasn't to you and it wasn't to me.
And who was she speaking to? Was she speaking to other Christian moms like her?
Yeah, it's part of the Christian nationalist movement. It's women being submissive and being in their place, which is hard for Katie because she is a senator. So she had to pull herself back to be able to speak like that. She started off by talking about the fact that she's a mother. So she's like, you know, I may be in a position of power, but actually I'm just a mom. And actually I'm going to talk about my husband and I'm going to mention him by name and talk about the fact that, you know, we hold hands and we pray for the rest of you, right?
And yet the image behind her, of course, is a kitchen, which I don't think that was lost on many people either.
It wasn't. The cross, everything in there was, you know, iconic traditional wife or trad wife, you know, fundamentalist. And she was speaking to those people specifically.
And when you go into that sort of voice, and again, this is not something you were taught. It's something you pick up on when you're in the culture. What message is it sending besides just, yes, I'm submissive, I'm not threatening? What is the intent for the listener when they kind of go into that pattern?
When I heard it all the time, it was usually with someone who I thought was, you know, better than me. They were a better wife. They were a better woman. They were a better person in general because they knew their place and they were showing you their place by speaking, you know, in that voice. And so it always felt to me, it was always a little off-putting because it was meant to make you feel like, you know, not as good as they are. I know that's weird.
Is there a male equivalent of that?
Well, there's the preacher voice. You know, I have to tell you, I was watching HGTV yesterday, and I was watching where people, you know, were buying a beach house, and it's their second house. And these people had $400,000 for their second house. And I was watching it, and I was like, I told my husband, I said, he's a preacher. And he listened. He was like, yep, he's a preacher. They never said what he did for a living. And finally, he did a really bad job on nailing in a piece of wood. And he said, I think I'll stick to preaching. And I was like, ah, I knew it. I knew it. Because they sound a certain way too. They sound congenial. They are jovial. They are easily approachable. And they have a speech pattern that is almost childlike as well, right? They call each other sister and brother. I mean, it's meant to be, you know, this family-like, almost childlike experience.
I think you had written something. I think this is your quotation I'm reading here. When you heard the Brit voice there, she was also harboring secrets. And that's something I can't forget. Terrible secrets behind that voice. Because the thing about what you wrote in your essay and what I've seen from others is that it's not just a voice you do when you're trying to get someone to trust you and you're trying to talk down to someone else. It's a voice you use when you're angry. It's a voice you do when you're trying to keep people off the scent sometimes. Like, what else when have you come across this in your life besides prominent figures, but in your life, who's using it?
So I remember a specific example when my oldest son, who's now 28, when he was in preschool and he went to the Baptist preschool. And I went to pick him up one day and his teacher came out and she said, I have to tell you what Spencer told me today. And I was like, oh God, like there's no telling what this kid has said. She said, I asked him, what's your mama been up to? And he said, smoking stogies on the back porch. And so I was a closet smoker and I thought he was asleep and I would step out and, you know, on the back porch. She came out with this baby voice to tell me that she knew something about me and that I was not as good as she was. Right. But so, you know, we encounter it when someone is admonishing us for doing something that we shouldn't be doing.
Last weekend, I had my in-laws over and we needed to make dinner in a crunch. Instead of ordering out, we did something even easier thanks to ButcherBox. We were able to grab just what we needed and exactly how much we needed from the freezer. After that, everything else was a breeze. You too can skip the grocery store knowing you have the food you trust and the food you chose in your freezer. I know that might sound strange coming from me since I'm vegetarian, but they have a high-quality veggie burger that I absolutely love. They have options for pescatarians, too. And if you eat everything, that's also okay. The food from ButcherBox is high quality, grass-fed, and free-range. Have peace of mind knowing there are no antibiotics or added hormones. Sign up at butcherbox.com/friendly and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free-for-a-year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/friendly and use code FRIENDLY to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. That's almost horrifying. let me play one more clip here. This is someone else who, until I started hearing it from a couple of different people, then you start recognizing the pattern. So this is Michelle Duggar also saying something in the same type of cadence and voice.
Well, I would think that I would encourage my girls, if they struggled with an eating disorder, to just be open and honest about that and to communicate.
It's the same. It seems higher pitched than I would be used to hearing. And also, she's talking about something very serious in that very short clip, I know, about an eating disorder, but just saying, I would do this. And when you start hearing that, it's like, oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about.
Right. They can talk about things that are absolutely horrifying. And then that voice, it's just such a juxtaposition. It's so, there's something so wrong about it, right? It's they deliver terrible news with a smile. And I talk about that in the essay about the fact that it's the bless your heart effect, right?
Which is something Katie Britt literally said in the speech as a joke.
I didn't even get that far into the speech, so I didn't hear that she said that when I wrote it. But I mean, of course, because that's what they do. It's, I know that you're doing something wrong, and I'm going to tell you about it. Bless your heart, right? And it's
that
delivered.
That was horrifying, by the way.
I'm so sorry. And people, you know, it's funny because I make a lot of TikTok videos, and people will say, oh my God, why are you talking about this? You sound the same. And it's like, I can't help it. I was born and raised in this. And when I was teaching, you know, when I'm speaking to people, a lot of times it does go back to that. And I have to jostle myself back out and pull myself back out of that because it's just, it's ingrained in our brain to do that. And I will say this too. It's not always, you know, malevolent. It does, you know, it's what kindergarten teachers sound like. It's just not normal to address grown adults on really serious topics in that sort of voice.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Between coaching, dealing with kids, and immersing myself in the news, one thing is clear. I feel like I never have any time for myself. What would you do with an extra hour in your day? Can you even imagine that? Well, if you know what's important to you, you can prioritize. And therapy can help you learn how to do that. Talking about what matters to you with a professional is such a useful way to understand yourself better so you can make the most of your time. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can help you make the most of your time no matter where you're starting from. Whether you've been through something rough or just want an outsider's perspective on whatever you're going through, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and flexible enough for anyone's schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/atheist today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/atheist.
How old were the students you taught when you were a teacher?
16 and 17, I taught high school.
So they teachers. Were older students, but then you're saying, did you ever slip into that voice when you were talking to them and trying to get them to act right as well?
Yes, yes, absolutely. You fall right back into it, especially if sometimes, you know, a lot of times with teenagers, you can be, you don't mean to be condescending, but you know, you're talking with them on their level. And sometimes I would fall into that and realize I sounded, you know, super condescending and like I was being a jerk. And so I would have to pull myself back out. It happens when you're, you know, mothering, when you're, it's especially the thing talking to really young folks who don't understand. And that's how it comes across with Katie. She knows more than you, right? She's smarter than you, but she's also better than you. And she's going to prove it by speaking in that voice.
This is a question. I did not grow up in fundamentalist Christianity, and I did not grow up in a particularly overly religious area, the South, the Bible Belt, or anything like that. But is this something everyone who has grown up in those environments would pretty much recognize and they've experienced it? It was all around them.
Yeah. And I think that is a lot of the reason I made a video about 5 months ago or so when Speaker Johnson was made our Speaker of the House.
Oh, we'll roll that clip very soon.
Yes, I saw his wife speaking and I knew. And so I made a video about it on TikTok and people were just like, what? Oh my God. They were just horrified by what they had heard and my explanation of it. And then TikTok took it down because they said I was bullying Kelly Johnson. So it kind of went away, but I did put it on
that
Twitter.
Is hilarious.
And as soon as people heard Katie Britt, my phone just exploded because people were tagging me. Oh my God, this is what you were talking about, right? And I, for years as a teacher, I traveled the country with other teachers. I worked with the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Arts and lots of different places trying to learn more during the summer. And inevitably, I would get close to teachers who were from New York or New Jersey or California. And when we would start talking about our backgrounds, I would talk about mine and they're often like, what do you mean? Like, I have an uncle whose wife, my aunt, delivers his food in the living room to his lap and then sits at his feet while he eats. And then she goes back in the kitchen and eats after he's done. Like, this isn't things that are just like absolutely crazy in fundamentalist culture. And so when I talked about this, people are always like, I don't understand. And then the documentary Shiny Happy People came out and people are like, oh, that's what you're talking about. They were able to experience Michelle Duggar and all these people in this culture and understand what I was talking about. And as you heard, if you've watched the documentary, you can hear the, you know, the way the women speak.
I've said this before on YouTube and on the podcast and stuff, but one of the things I appreciate about Shiny Happy People and that this whole influx of like docuseries about the evangelical world is, you've talked about this stuff. You've covered this stuff for a long time. So have I. But for most people, especially people who didn't grow up in that culture and who don't watch the Duggars for fun or something like that, this is new information to a lot of people. And it is horrifying, which is why we spend so much time thinking about it. And it's kind of nice in a disturbing sort of way that it's finally being exposed to more people. And things like Michelle Duggar's voice and things like that, those are small potatoes compared to the actual teachings, of course. But it's a nice thing to be able to put that stuff together for people who didn't experience it.
It is. And, you know, when I talk, the people I grew up with in Arkansas, we all experienced the same religious trauma. So it doesn't feel like trauma if we have all been through it, right? I mean, like what COVID will be to kids later, it's like a communal experience. And you're really like, this is horrifying trauma, what you went through. And that's how it felt coming out of fundamentalist culture. I mean, I had a girlfriend in high school who ended up getting pregnant. She had to go in front of the congregation and apologize for getting pregnant by herself. And you're like, I don't feel like she got pregnant by herself.
Someone else was involved here.
Where's the other half? The other half didn't show up. She apologized to the congregation for being pregnant. And that is normal. That is everyday. That's an everyday occurrence. And people were horrified by it. And I was like, I probably should be too. It just felt normal.
The irony is if she had gotten an abortion quietly, she would not have had to apologize to the congregation.
Exactly.
One viewer pointed this out. I heard this voice in the foster care system. Fundies love the foster care system.
They do. And, you know, I saw a foster mom talking about this, you know, and how foster kids experience going into a home and seeing, you know, biblical iconography everywhere, seeing crosses and Bibles and the voice, and also the way that they are, you know, now going to church three times a week. And that's hard. It's hard to be a foster kid in the system. I would say it's really hard also to be a foster kid in a home where these things don't make sense to you, right?
I want to play a clip that you just brought up, which was of Mike Johnson's wife, Kelly. And I think this is what you were referring to.
Well, you know, I used to be a school teacher and I loved that, but I just felt burdened for so many people. And I felt the calling to go back to school, to become a Christian counselor. And it's because I love people.
It seems to keep getting higher and higher, too, the more we have these clips that we see.
That is, that's very childlike. And I'm sure that all of your listeners automatically thought that sounds like a child, right? Which is another problematic layer to this voice. Why do these men want their women that they're married to sound like children?
Yeah, I feel like if it was on the other side and Democrats were the ones doing that, they would have a word to use to describe that about us.
Yeah, I've heard that word.
Yeah. Does this voice, when, let's say, Kelly Johnson or Michelle Duggar, like, this is the voice they have come to use when they are speaking in front of other people to convey all the stuff you were talking about. Let's say the doors close and the camera shuts off. Does that voice go away when they are talking to their families in private, when they're talking to their husbands in private?
Yes, it does go away. And it's pretty horrifying. It
drops down several octaves.
Yeah, the mask falls and it's really creepy to witness it. And I did witness it several times when I spent the night with, you know, friends that I went to church with or that I went to school with. It's very creepy. And that's another reason, you know, that, you know, it's for show. It's the way that they need to be perceived in public. But their husband knows they don't speak like that. And their children obviously know that they don't speak like that. Because, you know, while they're whipping them with a belt or whatever they're doing, the mask falls.
It's so interesting that, I mean, listen, I'm sure I do it even if I can't recognize it. And I noticed this like during the pandemic when everyone was shut inside. There were people in my home who, when they were on the phone trying to make work calls and stuff, it's like, you don't talk like that when you're not on the phone. And I'm sure I do the same thing. I'm not like letting myself off the hook here. We all have this version of ourselves that is public, that is very different from how we talk in private. But it is very interesting that this is the voice they go with as their public facing voice.
Yeah, my husband calls it my nice voice, right? You're putting on your nice voice for people, but it's just different because it's not, and I'll say this too, and I said it in the essay, people that use the voice aren't always, like I said, you know, bad people. They were just raised that way and they speak that way. The time and the place when I say pay attention is when these people have power or are, you know, in proximity to power. So Katie Britt holds a lot of power, and for her to slip into that says something. Kelly Johnson is adjacent to a whole lot of power, and that says something. The Duggars, you know, were multimillionaires and had all these horrible secrets. And that's what I was talking about. The secrets behind the voice is, you know, to cover it up. And so it's not just, I wouldn't point to a woman and say, oh my God, you have a fundy baby voice. It only matters to me when those people have access to power.
And that is an interesting thing about Katie Britt. She's a U.S. senator. She is not a housewife. And in fact, even if she wasn't a senator, I feel like she and her husband are both lawyers. Like, they're pretty well off, even if she's not in politics. So the idea that she's trying to pass herself off as something a lot less than what she really is more condescending almost than the tone.
It really is. I mean, she has a whole lot of power, and she had to act like she wasn't because of the people that she's speaking to. And, you know, when I talked about this on Twitter, I'm sure you have this happen to you all the time. I mean, I have thousands of trolls, people that follow me and put me on hundreds of lists so that they can say something every time I say something. And they provided so much pushback to this, you know, and I'm like, but you don't understand it. You weren't raised in the culture. And as soon as you are, you recognize it for what it is. And I had people say, well, her message wasn't meant for you. Actually, it was meant for women. We know that, right? They've come out and said, we picked Katie because she's a housewife or she's a woman and a wife. And we wanted her to speak to women because Republicans have a woman problem.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Tuberville, the senior senator from Alabama, literally said she was picked as a housewife, not just a senator. And I'm sure he meant that as a compliment.
When you said senior senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, I mean, I'm looking for my basket to puke in. Like, that is like a horrifying combination of words.
Makes me long for the hopeful future of Democratic Senator Nick Saban. We'll see.
Oh, God.
Maybe. It's the only one who can go after Tuberville. Like, what? It is weird. I don't remember hearing about this when Mike Pence was vice president. Maybe that's because I never really heard his wife speak at all. Very few times did I really see her in the public eye. I wonder if there's something about that proximity to power that takes this voice and turns it on, whatever the word I'm looking for, makes it even more unique.
Well, Mike Pence was the, you know, the fundy baby voice. He was in proximity to power to Trump. He had that. You remember when I talked about the pastor's voice? Mm-hmm. That's what Mike has, right? He comes across as he did horrifying things in his state. You know, AIDS went through the roof because of his policies. He did terrible things, but the way he spoke, just like with Mike Johnson, people are like, eh, he's nice, you know.
It's nice. Very, it's eerily calm whenever he speaks. I mean, just this recently, he said he's not endorsing Trump. He's been talking about January 6th, but it's so calm as to be forgettable when it comes from Mike Pence. And Mike Johnson, for all the things going on with him right now and all the work he needs to be doing right now, every time he talks, it's almost like he doesn't get called out for it, doesn't get quoted as much. Because it's so disarming.
Because he's nice. And you see people, I don't remember, I read an interview with someone who was a Democrat in the House, and they were like talking about his policies, but they said, but he's a really nice guy. And that is exactly how they can get over the things that they're doing. That's how preachers that preach messages of hate, if they do it in a Mike Pence sort of way, they can get away with it. It's not the Greg Locks taking a bat to a Barbie house, right? Yeah. Like, we recognize those people and we're horrified by them. But Mike could deliver basically the same message, both Mikes, and we would feel a different way about it. We'd feel gross about it, but at the same time, we'd be like, well, he seems kind of nice, right? Well,
this is almost what I saw when I was watching Nikki Haley and doing debates. Yes. I know Donald Trump wasn't on stage, but every time they talked about stuff, the media reaction to so much of her was positive. And it's like, no, her policies are just as bad. The things she wants, if she were president, are just as bad. But you're downplaying it because she's not screaming it. She's not saying incendiary things. And I feel that way about a lot of pastors, too, when I come across those clips. Because you're right. When they say horrific things, but with that nice cadence, whether it's the Southern Baptist preacher voice or just, hey, I'm your friend, I'm your buddy, I'm a youth pastor. Let's talk about why you cannot touch yourself or whatever it is. It's like, no, this is a bad message. But the way you say this stuff makes me think you're not a threat.
Just like Katie Britt. She could say those things and sound, and she didn't come across terrible to evangelicals that I still know. I mean, they were like, eh, it was kind of weird. It kind of felt like she was, you know, trying to act. But they weren't horrified by it, by, you know, like the rest of us who have never been in the culture or who have left fundamentalist culture and recognized, you know, what she was doing.
Do you think, I mean, what's the benefit of doing this? I'm trying to figure out how this develops, like, and why it develops, because it's one thing to just say, look, I'm submissive and you're the husband or father or whoever. Do they get anything out of it? Do they want anything out of it when they go into that mode and they talk like that?
Usually the people that I know that aren't in power are just looking for protection, right? They don't want to work outside of the home. They want to stay home with the kids. They want to live a certain life. And sounding like this and being like this, they think enables that to happen. But I mean, there's a reason you don't see women over 40, you know, on TikTok or anywhere else trying to be trad wives. We know. I don't want anything to do with that, right? So it's been passed down to a younger generation of women who look around and say, you know, I don't think I can do all of this. I don't think I can juggle all these balls and keep them in the air. And like, I get it, girl. I get it. It's hard. Forcing. And that's the thing about feminism, too. You want to stay home, you should stay home. You want to go to work, you should go to work. You should be able to do what you want to do, right? But they are being forced into this.
Can you explain that a little more? The women over 40 who don't talk about how they want to be trad wives. What? Tell us about that. What is it about younger conservative Christian women who are pressured into that lifestyle? What is it that they realize they don't like about it?
Well, they have a lot more estrogen than we have, so they react differently. to you know, what's going on in the world. But they're young. A lot of them haven't been out in the world for very long. Or like me, in my culture, I had, you know, I was married at 18 and I had a baby by 20. And that was absolutely normal by every standard when I looked around. And so they feel like this is what is meant to happen. And you can look at really, you know, right-wing culture where women are, they feel like they're revered. They feel like, you know, they're protected, that someone is looking out for them. And you realize when you get older that you need to do these things yourself. You can't be so dependent on somebody else. You know, if you have kids and you need to stay home because daycare is ungodly, I get it. I totally get it. But someone saying that's where you should stay, that's where you belong, is a totally different thing. And that's where women over 40 were like, don't tell me anything. Don't tell me where I belong. And definitely don't tell me that I should have to follow this and that I should be submissive to somebody else, because I'm not submissive to a man or a woman or anybody else. You can forget about that.
Speaking of women like that, I'm wondering if you follow all the Fundy Snark commentary on Reddit, because there are younger Christian women who are trying to push for exactly that lifestyle, and they do it on social media, and maybe they haven't figured it out yet. Maybe they're coming to terms with it every now and then. I'm wondering what you make of some of those people. You don't have to name names, but I'm wondering what you think about some of those Christian women who are probably in the position you were in when you were 18 or 20.
Right. Well, I just think that the world isn't, I mean, it's not black and white. You know, there's lots of shades of gray. I've stayed home before and worked from home while I had kids. We have 5 kids together. And so there were times, like when my youngest daughter was born, that I did step away from teaching for about, you know, 12 months and did my own daycare at home because it's something that I needed to do. But these, this trad wife, Fundy, these circles make you feel like that's what you should do. And if you don't, you don't love your kids enough. You're choosing your career. When actually you're like, no, I can't eat in this economy if we don't have a 2-income, you know, thing. My mother didn't stay at home. My grandmother worked. We're a couple generations away from women who, you know, really stayed at home. And I think that we're seeing women say, I, you know, like I said, I can't do all of this. And I think that's where we struggle with, you know, people having babies. Who can afford it? Who can afford daycare? And so it's all of these things just colliding.
I wanted to play one more clip for you because there was one other instance of the voice we're talking about that sends the same I'm not threatening message. And this is from Amy Coney Barrett when she was having her judicial Supreme Court confirmation hearings. This was part of her opening statement. Let me play this clip.
As I said when I was nominated to serve as a justice, I'm used to being in a group of 9, my family. Nothing is more important to me, and I am very proud to have them behind me. When I write an opinion resolving a case, I read every word from the perspective of the losing party. I ask myself how I would view the decision if one of my children was the party that I was ruling against.
Well, that's horrifying. She has the most power, the most power. And then that's a lie. Did you read your opinion on Roe from your daughter's perspective? That's a lie. And I can't stand that. I'm so angry about SCOTUS anyway. I'm so angry that 3 people lied and now they're on a court that decides everything to do with every part of our life that, you know, I can't stand it. But there's a woman from Missouri. She's a senator. She's actually running for Congress. Her name is Mary Elizabeth Coleman. And I think they have 6 kids. She's a Catholic. She has 2 nannies. She talks about the fact of how women, you know, should stay home. We should do these things. And I'm like, you are running for Congress with 2 nannies and you have the gall to tell women of my means what we should be doing. Amy Coney Barrett has the gall to tell women of my means how we should be raising our family, when we should be having a family. By the way, you should have 9 kids just like me. It's outrageous.
Yeah, it's a very privileged thing to be able to get away with saying that, you know, you have it all, you made it work, without respecting the fact that other people in different circumstances don't want that, can't have that, whichever one you want to choose there. And I mean, what I left out of that Amy Coney Barrett clip is she spent the next several minutes going through each of those kids and telling us all about them, which, for what it's worth, is something I do not remember. As one viewer here points out, I've never heard a man in politics talk about how many kids he has. And again, maybe there's a strategy to that. They were trying to ward off any attacks on Amy Coney Barrett. So it's like, talk about your family. That way, if they ask you questions about your religion, because it's unique, or they ask you critical questions of things you've written about, you can always fall back on, but I'm a mother with 9 kids or 7 kids or what have you.
When I first started running for office, I worked, you know, for 16 years as a teacher in a female dominated space. And so I really didn't feel the sting of sexism that much until I started running for office. And then I realized that there are a lot of folks who think that if you are a mother, you know, that you shouldn't be doing things, you shouldn't be outside of the home. And the first time I really heard this was when I went to Jefferson City, which is our capital, and I was talking to a Republican lawmaker, and he asked if I had kids. And I said, yeah. And he said, who's going to take care of them when you're in Jefferson City? And I thought, well, my husband, would you ask him that? Like, is that a question you ask of men? And of course it's not.
Yeah. I from what I have gathered, there are men with kids who serve in politics.
I've heard.
Yeah. There was one person who pointed out on Blue Sky, this is, I think, from Fred Clark's blog, but I have no idea what Katie Britt is saying, but I am absolutely convinced that her husband is a good man and the allegations of those assaults are untrue.
And that goes back to the thing about secrets, right? I mean, when Michelle Duggar talked like that to us, she knew that her son was molesting his sisters when she was speaking like that, when she was talking about family values and all of the things that made her better than us. Her daughters were in danger. And that's that secret part that always, every time I hear it, I'm like, you know, what is going on behind the scenes? Like, are you literally just smoking a cigarette on your back porch, or is something sinister going on in your home?
It is absolutely frightening to think about. We mentioned this earlier, but let me go back to the question of why are we talking about this at all? Because is it fair to call out something like a vocal pattern? Because this is something that happens especially to women. I say this as a speech coach myself, where we talk about this stuff all the time, where it's like, how come when you're talking, your voice does go an octave higher, it seems? How come your how come whenever you're speaking, how come the ends of your sentences end on an upswing, like you're asking a question? And part of me says that, and then part of me thinks, who cares? Like, why am I picking on this stuff? Because I want them to sound a certain way. But if that way is not who they are, maybe it seems like we're just attacking them over nothing.
Right. And that's why I addressed it at the beginning. It's not me, you know, harboring some sort of misogyny that I'm going to throw out at other women. If Katie Britt did not have access to power, I would not be speaking about it. I never said anything about it until I heard Kelly Johnson speak. And I felt like it was something that needed to be said. I watched 19 Kids and Counting way before there were 19 kids. I watched it from the beginning, and it wasn't abnormal for me. Hearing Michelle was being in Sunday school. Hearing Michelle was birthday parties and graduations, and every time I stepped inside a church, it's not upsetting to me. It's nothing worth noting until you realize that these women are using it to further something that, you know, all of us don't want. It's speaking to Christian nationalists. It's speaking to certain people with that pattern that they all understand. And like I said, if Katie Britt wasn't a senator, I wouldn't be here. There would be no reason to speak on it.
So if you are her campaign manager, or you are, you know, you have the chance to talk to these people about any of this. I mean, if Katie Britt has a different voice and delivers the same speech, it is still horrifying. But what advice do you give them as either a vocal coach? I mean, speaking specifically not on their policies, but do you tell them if you had a chance, like, stop talking that way? Or what would you tell them otherwise?
I think she spoke exactly like they wanted her to speak. I mean, just like you pointed out, Tuberville said, no, we picked her for this reason. I think she played the part and we are horrified by it, but the folks it was meant for are not. So I don't think, I don't know. I think they're embarrassed because it's gotten so much press because she did deliver it in that overly dramatic way. If she hadn't have had the other dramatics around it, it would have played much better and people would have been like, what's up with her voice? But it played to who it was supposed to play to. And now they also have the effect of being able to say, look at those liberals, you know, look at how they treat women who are, you know, just trying to talk about policy.
And before I, just to wrap this up, is there any final thoughts on the women we have talked about, the men who like make use of that or take advantage of that somehow? Any final thoughts there?
I really hope that people understand that, like we've talked about, it's not an attack on the way a woman sounds, but it's this march toward Christian nationalism. And if your listeners haven't, you know, picked up Project 2025, if they don't understand that everything from school vouchers to abortion bans to book bans to anti-LGBTQ to tax policies are all related, I hope that they would start paying attention and look at Project 2025. This is stuff they've already, you know, put into place, but now we have a blueprint saying this is what we're going to do. Talk about the fact that even if you are a religious person, you understand that the separation of church and state is there for a reason. We are on this march towards Christian nationalism, and it scares the crap out of me because, friends, I was raised in it. I know what they plan. And my final thought is to be aware and to be paying attention to what's going on around you as far as Christian nationalism is concerned.
And vote for down ballot races as yes. Well. There is a question here that is an interesting one. Do fundy men not take women with deeper voices more seriously, or is it the opposite where they would respect more masculine qualities?
I can't speak for, you know, all fundamentalist men, but most of their women, you know, sounded like Katie. They used that voice. So I don't know. I know that they like submission. Now, what they like in private, that's another whole show with all the sexual repression.
That is another question I did not get to that I purposely elided, which is this what they talk like in other places as well?
Right, exactly. There's so much repression that goes on within this society that it creates people like, frankly, Josh Duggar. It creates this system where people are just so repressed that they do awful and terrible things. And so I can't say for sure, but I suspect this has, you know, something to do with the other.
There is one more question. I'll try to rephrase this, but are Christian men aware of this issue? And is there any, have you ever heard of any push by Christian men to say, you know, we're pushing them in that direction to talk like that, to be submissive like that? Maybe there's some responsibility on us to be cognizant of that problem and to try to step away from that somehow. I don't think they're about to stop the patriarchy in evangelical churches, but I mean, even something as small as the way the cadence and the voices, if men are doing something to perpetuate that, are they aware of it? And are they possibly doing anything to make sure that women don't have to put on an act when they are talking?
Yeah, of course they're aware of it. I mean, the patriarchy is strong in here. Women aren't allowed to hold positions of power. Like, they can never preach from a Southern Baptist, you know, pulpit. We are to be submissive and to be, you know, not quite full citizens. We have no rights to our own body. They don't believe that marital rape is a thing. So of course, this all goes back to patriarchy. It wasn't women who just decided, hey, let's talk like this. Maybe something will happen. No, they realize that they're treated differently if they come across as this meek, mild, submissive woman who will obey.
I don't know the answer to this, but I'm going to raise the question anyway. When there are books in the Christian market written by these conservative Christian mothers and the audiobook is being read, would they use this voice? Or who? I mean, if it's the author saying it, maybe that's one thing. But if it's a hired gun who is there to deliver it, would they deliver? If Katie Britt wrote a memoir and someone was delivering the audiobook version of it, what voice would they use?
Well, first I have to tell you, I would never listen to an audiobook from a fundamentalist Christian woman, but I would guarantee you it would be delivered in a soft, sweet, submissive sounding voice.
For several hours on end. Jess, thank you so much for your time with me here. Just to let everyone know, Jess runs an organization called Blue Missouri. You can support that organization by going to bluemissouri.org. Jess, what else are you up to and where can people find you?
Well, I'm actually going to be in DC in a couple weeks at the Summit for Religious Freedom. So I'm really excited about that because we're going to be talking about issues like this, right? And then I speak all over the country to Democratic clubs, that sort of thing. They can reach out to me on, you know, Twitter or Facebook. I have my email address there, but just trying to get people to run in these races that are underfunded and where we don't normally have candidates. So that's my mission.
Well, thank you for doing that because it is so important. It comes up all the time here, how much your life is more affected by the people in elected office, down ballot,
yep,
local city councils, school boards, far more in a lot of cases than a senator or even the president at times. So what you're doing, I really respect it. I appreciate it. Thank you for talking to us about this issue.
Thank you, friend. See you soon.
See you soon.